But I do think, and I do teach my clients that it takes a lot of courage for men to show their grief to other men and to women, because we are taught that that's weakness, and actually to show it then requires extra amounts of courage. And that's, I really do believe that, the word in English, courage.
Awe Genge, this is Mental Matters, hosted by Asako Toto. In my previous interview, I spoke about men's mental health and how it has affected within us and also grief. And grief, it's something that I've realized is something that takes a toll on someone, especially men. And we are expected to just keep a straight face and not grieve too much and not being stuck in that process. So on your profile, it says that you had a complex trauma and you were bullied at high school. So can you tell us more on that story? How, in terms of how did you come into light on being of seeing this trauma?
Well, the trauma occurred when I was a very young child, from probably the ages of 3 to about 8, and it was sexual abuse trauma by a member of the family, and it also happened to another young member of my family who will remain nameless at the moment. And it was not remembered until I was 52 years old, and it was remembered because the next generation was traumatized by the same person. And all the victims were boys, so the next generation, the victim was a boy as well. And that victim came home, and there was clearly something wrong, and then the rest of the family who were victimized figured it out. And that was in about 2007. As I say, I was already 52 years old. And so I was already a mental health professional counselor at that time. I'd already been on a long-term spiritual enlightenment path and had a very noticeable spiritual awakening and shift. And so we then, looking back, I discovered the source of much of my depression, my anxiety, my dissociation, the reasons that I was hospitalized in a mental health clinic for 2 months when I was about 20 years old. All those things suddenly became clear to me. And so that's the complex trauma. And then, I was not, my parents were divorced when I was 5 or 6 years old. So my father was not around. And so I was bullied a lot at school, and I had nobody to go to tell me how I was supposed to behave as a young man, because he wasn't around. And we didn't speak about those things anyway. So, even when he was around, we never talked about our emotions or how to be men. So it was many years later, already a professional counselor, when I had to figure all of these things out.
That's really tough. And I would like to go back in terms of that sexual abuse trauma. And when you found out that you had this specific trauma and something that I would say you didn't deal with properly, how did you feel? As I know that, as in the place of a mental health professional, you might say to, if it happened to someone, you would advise them how to treat it. Would you say that you answered, you came with that mentality in dealing with it?
I think that I knew that I needed to get professional help again myself, and so I went to seek a counselor who was skilled with helping people with trauma, because I was not yet skilled at that. And I started to experience a tremendous amount of anger, but underneath of that, a tremendous amount of grief and fear, because I felt as if my entire early life had been a lie, that I had created a false picture of my growing up, my childhood. And now I had a very clear picture, and it was a very ugly picture, because it looked like we were a very normal family, but in fact, there was this terrible thing going on. And So there was a whole period of time, Iseko, for about 18 months after we discovered this and we remembered, where I would come home every night and either I was doing a form of yoga to help me with the trauma, and I would lay down on my yoga blankets and I would either cry or I would shout and scream and yell, or I would do both. And in the middle of that, somewhere I was also aware that there was a deep awareness in me that was untouched by the trauma and by the emotion that I was feeling at that point. And so that sort of shining presence, even though it was obscured, kept me going through those times as well. I had really good therapists and some good spiritual teachers, and they helped me to keep the structure of my life together, even though I felt I was falling apart inside of myself. Mm.
And I would like to touch, and again, I would like to touch more on feeling that you are falling apart. And I feel like I've been several times that in that situation of thing that I'm falling apart. And one thing that you mentioned is the fact that crying, and as I've said earlier, I had a conversation with a guest in my previous episode where we spoke about men's health and the thing of crying. One thing that right. When I grew up, I had this mentality of that men don't cry, men that don't show emotion.
So did I.
So as someone who grew up like that, was it easy for you to cry? And in terms of, did you in any way judge yourself for being emotional and for crying that much?
Not when I realized what had happened to me. But before that, I mean, when I was a teenager, I would never cry. I would rather have died of shame than have cried in front of anyone. And even now, I don't cry easily in front of others. I understand that for all of us men, wherever we live, the standard seems to be, as you said early, that we hold it in, that we try to stay calm, that we try to stay what they call strong, which I think is actually a kind of weakness, and that we not show our sadness to other men or to anybody else. And so, but by the time I was, 52 years old, I had been a therapist, I had been in therapy, I had learned how to cry, but typically I went into my own room and closed the door and cried by myself. It was very rare that I cried with anyone else around. And so even now I would say it's quite, I feel sadness quite easily, and I know in myself that I'm sad or upset if I am, but I don't necessarily express that very vocally or very visually even now. And I'm almost 70 years old now. So, it's been I can feel the feelings and the emotions, but I tend to restrict my demonstration of that grief when I'm in public or in front of other people, even my clients. I want the focus to be their grief if they're grieving. And I'll tell you though, that a lot of the men that come and see me and work with me are able to cry in the office, which I mean, I think is extremely courageous of a man to be able to cry in front of others. I don't always have that courage myself, but I certainly have the courage to feel grief and sadness and feel it whenever it's there. And I do.
And also, I would like to jump on spiritual coaching. And how did you come off knowing it? And how did you find out that it's type of a way of finding healing?
Oh, well, that's a wonderful question. So it's a very long answer, but I'll say briefly that I was born into a Jewish family. And when I was 15, I found out that I could escape from my bullying by going to school abroad. I went to international school in the south coast of Wales from 1971 to 73 in a castle that had been bought by the newspaper owner William Randolph Hearst. Mm. And I was at school with students from 50 countries. And the answer to the prayers that I said in those days made me convinced that there was a God, because I was told that I would not qualify for scholarship money. My parents told me that I wouldn't be able to go if I didn't get a scholarship. And so for a month solid, almost constantly, I prayed, if there's a God, I want to know that there's a God by having this miracle, by having a scholarship to the school. And when I got one, that changed my perspective, and I really started to believe there was a God. And then I spent many years in evangelical Christianity, and sometimes, actually for 7 years, I lived in a cult. And then I started to explore other faiths when I left that cult and eventually found instruction in Eastern mystical paths like Buddhism and Hinduism, primarily Hinduism and yoga. And there I discovered that, in fact, the spirit of the Creator was manifest inside of me and as me and was me. And that became a great healing because I understood that no matter what I was feeling emotionally, the truth is that I was also that presence or that awareness that was, in a sense, unsullied, undirtied by any of the trauma that had happened to me or the emotion that I was feeling. And so that was part of the healing process, that I was able to return always to that quiet, silent aspect of myself that I call presence or awareness, and find some continuity there. And when the stored up emotion, the repressed emotion from my childhood, finally was spent and all the waters of grief and anger had poured out of me, then I was able to return to that stable, calm awareness that we all are underneath everything else.
Yeah. So what signs did you see that you were in a cult?
The signs of being in a cult are that they are basically telling you that unless you do exactly what they say, that you're going to be hated by God, and that only they have an inside, relationship with God, and you do not. So the sign of a cult is the cult leader is always saying, I'm holy and I'm loved by God, and you're only loved by God if you follow me and listen to me. So the cult leader is always trying to control the cult member. And, you know, typically they exercise control over every aspect of your life, whether it's a Christian cult or a Buddhist cult or a Hindu cult or A Course in Miracles cult, or whatever kind of cult it is. You always see two things mixed up. You see love and God on the one hand, and on the other hand, you see fear and retribution and fear of punishment all over the place. And so when those two things are together, and when you don't have the freedom to follow your own heart and your own internal voice of God, that's a sign of a cult.
As you were explaining that the signs that you saw, a thought came onto me, and I feel like, in a way, how can I improve this? I feel like most churches like that, and let me not say churches, but religion. I believe that religion is a cult because it mostly focuses on a certain person and other certain rules that before you meet God, you must follow these rules. If you don't follow these rules, you won't be connected to God. But I don't want to dive deep on this thing of religion and Christianity. But on my side, I believe that God works and also has impact on our lives. And there is this, I don't know how to explain it, but there's this tainted thing about Christians, that Christians are fake believers, I would say fake believers, and people would most often convert to Muslim or other religions. So let me not get into that conversation because it will be a long thing. Whereas I want to talk about it's about mental health in general. So I want to go back to when I was going through your website. I read something, and what stood out to me is the fact that the stigma around men going to therapy, and I believe that it's true because myself, that I wouldn't say that I would quickly go to therapy because I have this perception that this person won't understand what I'm going through. I would say that I won't understand when I speak this certain language. There's this theory I think I read on P. Hansen. I'm not quite sure where I read it, whereas Black people most usually want Black therapists, and I don't know about white people, but that's why I read it, because it's the fact that they understand where they come from, and they understand the language of being Black, of all these characteristics. But what would you say to a person that doesn't believe in therapy?
I would say this, first of all, the stigma of going to therapy has been reduced for men a great deal in the last 20 years since I started practicing as a therapist. When I first started practicing, almost always there were women who were coming to me. And now in the last few years, I mean, mostly it's men that come to me, and the men that are coming are even young men, even as young as 21, 23 years old. They don't feel the same stigma about going to therapy. And people now begin to understand that therapy isn't because you're crazy, because you've lost your mind or you can't cope. Therapy is to help you to learn to be a human being and help you to understand what happened to you in your life and how that affected your thoughts and your emotions and your behaviors. And so I do think there is still some stigma about it. I mean, some men are reluctant to come and they take their time or they're afraid to come. But I had a young man, to me young, who's about 35, who showed up yesterday for the first time. Another man, 40, showed up on Monday for the first time. And these men, certainly the second one, had never done therapy before, but because a close friend of his had been a client of mine, he felt comfortable enough to come. And he also felt like the stigma was really being removed. Now, about the other thing that you bring up, I was just listening to this yesterday. I have to take continuing education courses to be a therapist. And yesterday's course was about prolonged grief disorder. And a young African-American woman was talking about how she was looking for an African-American therapist because she felt that therapist would understand her experience of living with prejudice. But I think what she said was that she could only find an old white man to be her therapist, but that because he was willing to talk to her about how he knew that her experience was different from his, he validated her experience of being prejudiced against, and she felt that she could talk to him. So it really depends on whether the therapist is sensitive to the cultural differences, is willing to talk about them openly, and then is willing to hear when the person who they're speaking to, in this case, if it's an African-American or actually a South African, if that person has experience of prejudice, as a therapist, I need to be willing to hear about it and hear their anger and their pain and their grief about it and their fear about it. And if I can, then perhaps I can work with him or her. But yes, somebody would prefer someone who's had very similar experience because they believe the empathy would be better. But any good therapist should have a great deal of empathy, or they better not be practicing for too long.
I don't quit. And yes, the word empathy, usually people, I would say, going back to the conception of man, it's a word that have lost its meaning in a way. When I say lost its meaning, is the fact that we have redirected the word and kicked it out on our vocabulary in terms of as I've said earlier, that we as men, we don't not usually in touch with our emotions and crying. And I would like to go back to the thing of crying. In all honesty, you mentioned that when you are alone, you are able to cry, but when you are in front of other people, you cannot. On my case, I can't cry when I'm alone. I can't cry when I'm outside, because I feel like I still have this mentality, I would say programming. I don't know how to put it. So I have this thing of saying, if I allow myself to cry, I will continuously beat myself up with words of saying that I am weak, I'm not worth it. So in terms of a person like that, how would you advise them to go about on that?
No, I understand what you're asking. And what I say to most people is that I believe that it takes more courage to cry in front of others than it takes to hide your feelings. And it takes courage because you're challenging a bad social standard and you're having the courage to do that openly. Now, for me, I would tell you that I don't sob, boo-hoo, right? But My eyes do get wet if I'm sad in front of other people, but I tend to control the amount of grief that I show. And that also depends on whether I trust the people that I'm with or not. If I don't trust the people that I'm with to understand me and love me, then I'm not going to cry in front of them. But if I do trust them, then it's likely that my eyes are at least going to get wet. My tears may fall, but still I tend to restrict my my noisy crying, if you will. To privacy. And that's really my own shyness, I think, about my own feelings. But I do think, and I do teach my clients, that it takes a lot of courage for men to show their grief to other men and to women, because we are taught that that's weakness, and actually to show it then requires extra amounts of courage. And that's, I really do believe that, you know, the word in English, courage, comes from the French, rage de coeur, rage of heart, which means that I have to have enough love for myself and love for whatever I've lost, which is what grieving is about. I've loved something, I've lost it, whether it's an occupation, whether it's an ability, whether it's a person, whether it's a home. So I have to have enough rage of heart or enough love in me to be willing to show the grief. Mm. Because grief is the inverse, is the opposite side of the coin of love.
Jimmy Carter said, you met, earlier you mentioned anger, that you had emotions with that involved anger when you come, you remember the sexual abuse trauma. And Jimmy Carter was on a podcast of, well, the CEO, where he mentioned that when you have, he was talking about outbreak, where he says that amount of anger, that's love towards that certain person. And I really, it was a really fascinating thing, but when, as it's very different when it comes to sexual abuse and any type of trauma. So how do you forgive someone who has abused you physically or emotionally? How do you forgive that certain person?
Well, you actually have to go to them, and they actually have to own or take responsibility for having done that to you, and they have to apologize from their heart. Then I think there can be, you know, forgiveness in the sense of reconciliation and the possibility of a relationship. But if they deny that they did anything to you, or if they say that they can't remember or they just lie, then you can't really reconcile with them. However, when all the pain of what's happened has kind of moved through your body and your system and out of you, when there's no pain left, or there's very little pain left anymore in you, it's easy to just say, you know, I'm not going to be angry or hate this person anymore. Most people who sexually abuse others have themselves been sexually abused. And in the case in my family, that was the truth. They could remember the abuse by others, but they couldn't remember the abuse that they did. So in my family, there was no reconciliation possible. But I don't hold, when the pain is released, and the anger and the fear and the grief all sort of move out of you. And in my case, it took really 18 months for that process to unwind and for most of that to move out. And one day I just didn't find any more in there to cry about. Once that happens, you can really let go of being angry and hating the other person, because the effect in you is now finished. And that's how I found that the healing was possible. It's like, well, I can't really reconcile with this person, but I can stop thinking about them, stop hating them, stop being angry with them, and in that sense, forgive them. The other thing is that we also have to understand, especially that if we were children, that we were not guilty and we have no shame in having been sexually abused by someone else who was a grown-up or older than we were, even by 4 or 5 years. And when you can let that guilt, that false shame go, then also you're much easier in your own self. And so you can really sort of say, you know, as far as it goes, I can forgive this person. I can't reconcile with them, but I can forgive them. And the reason that we can't reconcile, Seiko, is that we don't feel safe with somebody who doesn't remember or won't admit to what they do or did. So we can't really reconcile, because then we can't take our guard down with that person. And, you know, I had my own psychiatrist and still do. I see him now only just twice a year. But, you know, he said to me, look, your brain, when you're afraid of that person who harmed you and you never apologized, Your brain is doing what it's supposed to do. It's protecting you, and it's, you know, allowing you to survive. Because being around that person or even trying to be in contact with that person would only create for me sleepless nights and nightmares and high levels of anxiety, because my brain was saying this person is still not safe. And that's true. So again, I want to differentiate between reconciliation and sort of letting go and forgiving, in the sense of letting go of anger and hatred against the person who wronged you.
I'm seeing that we are running out of time, and I think we almost, the time is up. Before you go out, okay, I'd like you to share some words to young people, young men, especially for young men who are skeptical on going to therapy, who are skeptical of on showing emotions and talking about their mental health. So what would you say to them?
I would say that it's so much easier to learn how to be a human being if you talk about your feelings and your thoughts, if you find someone to trust who can help you to learn how to be a human being. Much easier to do that when you're young than to do that when you're old. And so the great opportunity exists to live without all these obstructive patterns that will make your life miserable if you uncover them when you're young. And, you know, young men have a lot of physical courage, so that means they have courage. They can take that physical courage and apply that to their emotional lives and be courageous about exploring their emotions and their thoughts, then their courage is complete across the whole spectrum of their lives. And that makes them a very strong man, not a weak one. And that's what I'll say.
That's powerful. That's powerful. That's powerful. Things. I would like to say thank you so much. Actually, the engagement was pretty interesting. And as I believe that, I hope this interview will reach enough men that are probably young and being able to look after their mental health. And I love the fact that you keep up. In a way, I believe that we are on the same mission of spreading love towards men in terms of talking about their mental health and just educating the society as a whole to view men as normal people, not these people who have superpowers, people that they can be everything. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time and your
very welcome
experience when it comes to mental health as a whole.
It's my pleasure. And I thank you so much for these kinds of broadcasts that reach people that would never be reached otherwise. It's a wonderful thing that you're doing. Thank you.